This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. The Stone Center has long served as the center for black scholarship at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and it is turning 25 years old this fall. The center kicks off its 25th anniversary with an exhibit by painter Tim Okamura. It's entitled, This Story Has Not Yet Been Told. The exhibit is made up of Tim's larger-than-life portraits of black and brown men and women in their city environments. You can see some of the images at our website, WNC.org, right now if you promise to keep listening. Joseph Jordan is director of the Stone Center. He's also a professor of African American Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And he is with us again. Joseph Jordan, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Tim Okamura is a Brooklyn-based painter. His exhibit opens at the Stone Center tomorrow evening, and he joins us as well. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Frank. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Tell us about the pieces that you chose for this story has not been told. Tell us why you chose them and about a little bit about the pieces themselves.
Well, it was a little bit of a collaborative effort, actually, between myself and Dr. Jordan. Really, the show ended up being basically a retrospective, in essence, of work that I've done dating back to about 2004, 2005, so almost 10 years. And we managed to put together the collection of work from private collections around North America. So there was a little bit of a logistical challenge there as well. But I think that the work that is in the show is a good representation of really what I've been up to for the past almost decade. And I think that the spirit of the positive messages that are inherent in the paintings are fairly consistent throughout those pieces.
Joseph Jordan, tell us about that spirit and those messages that you see in these works.
Well, that's one of the things that I think Tim accomplishes quite well. He really has a way of bringing out the nuances in people's just in the way that people are their stances, I guess I would say. The way that you see them depicted very much as natural. It's kind of a realist approach to the art, but you tend to see a little bit more. He's not what I would call a message artist, but they are deeply, deeply imbued with particular kinds of statements about life, about perseverance, about notions of politics in this particular period in our history. And I think that more than he would admit, he really does do a great deal of social commentary without intending to do so.
Perseverance, persistence, a kind of willfulness in some of the poses. One of the pieces, I think the words representing are written across the piece. Tim, what about that? How much of that, if it's not message work, how conscious are you of representing in a sense?
Well, I guess there's more consciousness in recent years, in terms of what the message is going to be as the work has gotten more exposure. But I feel like I've always, stayed true to myself in terms of my interests, in hip hop, my interest in painting people. It's a real collision of a lot of different influences that have come together to basically inform the work. And like I said, I think part of the underlying message there is one of positivity, and whether it's represent or other titles like altruism or faith or hope, those are always kind of the messages that are in the back of my mind that I'm trying to get across. I think.
Tell us about how you first became invested in hip hop culture in Canada, right?
Yes, exactly.
Did they have that up there? I don't. Here's the problem. I'm from Buffalo, and we just make jokes about folks across the border all the time. And so I cannot resist doing this. But I assume there is some hip-hop culture up there.
Yeah, rightfully so.
in Saskatchewan, I believe. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, and I was always really, really into music. There wasn't really a lot to do because the winters were so long. So if you didn't ski or play hockey, then you sort of had to find ways to entertain yourself. And so for me, it was art and music, and I was playing in bands and also painting and whatnot. I was a little bit young to have experienced the the punk rock explosion that a lot of older friends of mine had really embraced. And so when hip hop came along and really you know, burst onto the scene. I mean, I just, for some reason, it just spoke to me in terms of message and in terms of, you know, being this really exciting, you know, rapidly evolving new genre that just captured my imagination. I always liked rhythm and beats and poetry and all those things came together. So I was probably one of the only friends in my circle of friends to really be listening to hip hop, you know, back in the mid-80s even. And it just continued to grow from there. When I was in college, I actually managed to get my own hip hop radio show. So,
well, and you've talked about, I mean, being the only one, you have also talked about a feeling of being the outsider. I mean, tell us why that is and sort of how you grew up and how you, how that played a part in your art.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm half Japanese and half British in terms of heritage, born in Canada. I think being half Asian, I was always, you know, considered a little bit different and a little bit of a fish out of water, if you will. And, you know, I experienced, you know, kids' cruelty, you know, towards anybody that's different, you know, just it's very sort of a classic scenario. But, you know, Asians, every type of Asian slur in the book was thrown my way. I would get into fights. And really, the only thing that kind of, I guess, sort of, you know, justified my my existence was my art at that time. Not justified, but I think that that's something that other kids saw that I had ability with. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of went from the name calling and the, you know, the conflict to saying, hey, you know, this, can you draw something for me and that type of thing. So that, you know, also encouraged the artwork moving forward. But it was interesting to experience, you know, some racist incidents when I was young and, you know, painful and but had a profound and lasting impact, I think.
Joseph Jordan, how does Tim's work fit into the scholarship of art at the Stone Center?
Well, you know, it falls, first of all, within our mission. I mean, that's the consideration, that's the primary consideration for who we bring to the gallery. And it was our sensibility that the way that Tim approached these subjects brought him directly. I mean, to me, it's no different than a scholar who comes from Canada or Europe or whatever who writes about slavery or who writes about the jazz era, whatever. We are interested in how the subject is made clear to the public or what kind of discussions it generates. And I think that when folks see what Tim has done, it will raise another level of conversation. I think what he's told us about himself, and he and I had that conversation for about a minute when we first met, and I told him that that we have a very, very long history of dealing with encounters. Not necessarily confrontations, but encounters between cultures. And for the African-American community, that's a clear sort of continuity in our history, that the steps forward oftentimes have come after encounters with other cultures.
So, Tim, you said something that was interesting earlier, too, that as your work became more well-known, your consciousness about the message changed. I mean, how does that work? What was it about the fact that people – was it the fact that people had certain expectations about your work? How did that play into your art as you became more well-known?
Well, I think that, you know, when you're just first making the work, it's just you in your studio and there's no real – you know, in my case, there wasn't really any kind of thought about how the outside world would perceive the work and the person that was creating the work as sort of a holistic – kind of package, you know, that they would have a reaction to. And so as the work has gotten more exposure, then it's like, who's making the work? You know, what does he look like? And, you know, it's something that's, you know, a really urgent question, usually, you know, like, why are you making these paintings? And I think a completely understandable question and valid. And, you know, it's always kind of this these sort of preconditioned expectations that we relate to certain things that we see or music that we listen to. We automatically, you know, draw a picture in our mind of who's making this. And in my case, it's always a surprise. But I think that the interesting thing in terms of the consciousness is that, you know, I just had these sort of instincts to go with, you know, the subjects that I chose. I always found myself drawn towards people that I was just basically interested in telling their story. And I didn't really think about the repercussions of that down the line. And recently I came across a quote by Susan Sontag, which has really resonated with me, which she said at one point that making social comment is an artificial place for an artist to start from. And basically, if an artist is touched by some social condition, what the artist creates will reflect that, but you can't force it. Mm. And that I feel is really defined for myself exactly my progression, my evolution as an artist.
Well, let's go back to that. We talked about that work called Representin', or that it at least reflects that. Maybe I'd ask you to describe that work, talk about the story behind it and some of the subtleties, because at first blush, when you look, there's a kind of, in many of your works, this kind of defiant pose that in a way plays to type. But, you know, as Joseph says, there is a lot of subtlety and a lot of nuance in terms of what else is being expressed there. And I think that's the beauty of the art, is that I come to it with an expectation, you meet that expectation, and then within seconds I'm drawn more deeply into this provocative painting. Would you describe that one for us and tell us about the storyline?
Yes. Thanks for saying that. That's really something that I strive to do is, have people have a sort of an immediate visceral reaction that it might be one thing, and then they get drawn deeper into it and see sort of another story behind that. And Represent is a painting depicting basically a man and a woman, both friends of mine. But the man is sitting on a chair, and he is actually half white and half black. But not African American. He was born in Canada, and the woman in the painting is also, she's half Jamaican and half Native American, and or in Canada we say First Nations. So it's two people that are both Canadian, but you know, when you see the painting, I think the immediate reaction is these are two black people. But there is a more complicated story behind their ethnic makeup, and there's also a more complicated story behind their nationality, their relationship, all these things that are more subtle, I think, that, lead one to a deeper exploration of seeing beyond, like I said, the visceral reaction and really seeing in the models, finding within them more the sort of commonality or I think discovering through them sort of a metaphor, for deeper human condition that we all share.
Well, Joseph, it seems to me that gets to some of what you were talking about earlier in terms of trying to generate a conversation at the Stone Center. And I wonder how things have changed, the mission has changed, or has it, since you've gotten there?
Well, I've been there now going on 13 years. So in essence, the mission was not necessarily changed but expanded upon. In other words, we were given a great deal to work with, and we felt that it was only appropriate that we broaden the kind of engagements and the kind of questions that we wanted to deal with. And I think what Tim is expressing is part of that. To a great extent, in fact, one of the first programs we did was a program that focused on encounters between African Americans and Native Americans. The next year we did South Asian communities and African Americans. The next year we did Middle Eastern communities. And oftentimes what we placed in the gallery served as a support for those kinds of conversations. So unfortunately, Tim didn't tell me that the subjects in these two pieces had all of that, because when you look at any of his work, there are encodings, as I call them, glyphs and all kinds of things in the background that you have to get very close to the piece to be able to see. And I actually met the gentleman who's depicted in Represent, Taha Clayton is his name, wonderful guy. Really, really nice guy. And, much of this does not reveal itself. And I think that's how we are as people, that there are layers, that there are contradictions, there are continuities, there are all kinds of things that happen. And as an artist, he gets to play with us. And I think that's, in some cases, what tends to happen.
Well, Tim, I'm waiting for your piece entitled You Don't Look Canadian. But I'll have to wait. Listen, you've been having conversations about hip-hop and art with the producer of Swizz Beatz, right?
Yeah, actually, I was fortunate enough to sit down with him initially a couple of years ago. We ended up talking for a couple of hours, and you know, he's a big collector of art. He owns Basquiat pieces, Warhol prints. I think he recently bought a Salvador Dali drawing, so he's got a pretty significant collection. And the conversations we had were really interesting. You know, he's really trying to pioneer the idea of, you know, he was talking about, you know, having conversations with Kanye West, with Jay-Z, you know, all his friends. He knows everybody in that scene, obviously. And basically telling these guys, listen, don't spend, you know, 200 grand on another chain, you know, or another Rolex to celebrate, you know, the finishing recording your record. You know, it's not going to mean as much and it's not going to have that value to you down the road. It's like art is the way to go. Buy a painting. Celebrate by buying a painting or buying a drawing or a sculpture and get into, you know, this idea that visual arts is tied into, you know, other creative mediums and you know, bring awareness of the visual arts into the hip hop community where it hasn't really, you know, had a real strong presence, I think, previous, you know, aside from graffiti maybe. But
well, and then there, I guess it leads to, and I'm guess I'm out of time and I'm sorry, but it sort of leads to things like Picasso Baby by Jay-Z, right?
Absolutely. And that happened 2 years later after that conversation. Now Jay-Z is with the program.
Fabulous. So. Tim Okamura, thank you so much for being on the program. Brooklyn-based painter.
Thank you.
His exhibit, This Story Has Not Yet Been Told, opens at the Stone Center tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. For more information, you can link to our website at stateofthings.org. Joseph Jordan, the director of the Stone Center and a professor of African American Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks again. Thank you, Tim, too.
Thanks for listening to our program. Our website is WUNC.org, and this is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.